Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Alaska Patriot Network. I'm Dahl, and I am your host for tonight's show. We're so glad you could find us here. I will be joined here shortly by Lori Ann, the host of the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann show. You can find that right here at Blog Talk Radio, Sunday evenings, 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific. And it's a great show. You'll find me there, too, in the co-host chair. We switch roles on those nights. And, hey, we have a great show lined up for everybody tonight. There's a lot going on here in the U.S., but there's also going on around the world that I think plays into a bigger picture and scenario. And we're going to have an opportunity to touch base on that. We'll also be updating you on what the scumbucket technocrats were up to in Davos this last week while the WEF and their minions were there. United States was the greatest number of any country in attendance there. So I think it's important to look at who was there in attendance at that meeting and some of the agenda they discussed. We know a lot of it has to do with eat bugs, you'll own nothing and be happy, and depopulation and climate crisis. So we're not going to spend too much time touching base on that. I think a lot of you listeners out there have a good grasp on it, but I did want to, hit on that. So we've got a great show for everybody. We're going to play a little bit of music while we get this, everybody gets set up in their respective studios. I'm broadcasting live from Alaska. Lori Ann's broadcasting live from Oregon. So, we collaborate the best we can. So buckle up, hang tight. We got a great show coming for you.
Doctor says my blood pressure's down, and it's been that way since you skipped town. And I know you thought you're leaving would make me feel like screaming, but baby, I ain't even stressing out. I bet you thought I'd be getting lonely, thought I'd be getting angry, but girl, I ain't even getting mad, 'cause I've been getting laid. Baby, you should know that I don't need your criticism, pessimism. I've been keeping it on the DL. Got a girl that keeps it real, and it's on a need to know, and all you need to know, babe. Since you've been gone, I've been getting laid back. Used to have these headaches all day long, but it's disappeared since you've been gone. And that girl next door, she sees me, loves how I'm taking it easy, blows kisses at me while I'm on my lawn. Bet you thought I'd be getting lonely, thought I'd be getting angry, but I've been getting luckier than that. I've been getting laid back. Baby, you should know that I don't need your criticism, pessimism. I've been keeping leaving it on a DL. Got a girl that keeps it real, but that's all I need to know, and all you need to know, babe. Since you've been gone, I've been getting laid back. Got a girl that keeps it real, but that's all I need to know, and all you need to know, babe. Since you've been gone, I've been getting laid.
Tune in for the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show, Sundays, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. I promote liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you, and I hope listening to my show becomes part of your Sunday night routine.
Well, I could tell you about him cheating and how I stood there while she was screaming out his name beneath my Egyptian cotton sheets. And I could tell you how she's much younger and how she lies and tells him he's a good lover. How a dolphin on her back.
Well, we are back. Welcome to the Alaska Patriot Network. This is Dahl. I'm your host. We're joined here by Lori Ann, the host of the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann show. You can find that show right here at Blog Talk Radio, Sunday night, 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific. And it's a great show. Sometimes goes into bonus hour overtime. I grace the co-host chair on that show, so we reverse roles on that night. We always welcome your call-in. So guest call-in number is 515-602-9722. 515-602-9722, and press number 1, and that raises your hand in our studio queue and lets us know that you want to chime in on the conversation. And, you know, feel free. We don't mind backtracking, you know, on a topic to include you. So if you think we've moved on and you've missed your opportunity or you thought of something that pertained to it, you know, we always welcome, you know, that insight and participation from our listeners, because that's what makes talk radio so much fun. It's such a privilege to be here, and I want to give a shout out to our service members and veterans. Thank you for your service and for keeping America free. Without your selfless service for this beautiful country, we wouldn't be free to make these broadcasts and bring this uncensored discussion to your homes and your cars and your airplanes and your boats and wherever you may be. So maybe you're up on a beautiful mountaintop. Anyway, so Lori Ann, welcome into the show.
Hello, my dear. Great to be here. Happy Friday.
Yeah, it crept up on us. I this morning I was like, oh, it's Friday already. It's time for another great show. We're ready to go.
I was thinking
so,
that yesterday.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, it's Thursday already, and you know, time to, you know, let's think about what we're going to talk about on tonight's show. And as usual,
yeah,
there's so much stuff that if we don't cover it in tonight's show, then I'm sure we could spill over on Sunday night on my show.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've just got a lot of unique topics tonight that, you know, well, the WEF and the Davos elitists, you know, that's their, you know, muckery is nothing new. I mean, we're all pretty well versed with that. But I did want to point out some takeaways from this last gathering. And then we have, and then something else we'll be talking about is the fact president and two prime ministers that have stepped down in the last month. We've got Vietnam, Taiwan, and New Zealand. And we're going to discuss that because yes, it's important to look at who stepped down, but doing research today and looking at who's going to be really replacing these key people is actually very noteworthy, and we're going to discuss that tonight. So, like I said, you guys want to call in, the number is 515-602-9722, and then press number 1. I did want to start off, since I am in Alaska, and I do try to, you know, talk about Alaska a little bit. There was a horrific polar bear attack this last week. And it just breaks your heart. It was a young mother and her one-year-old son in a village about 100 miles north of Nome. And it's respectively called Wales. The village, the community itself is, yeah, in Wales. So anyway, so a 24-year-old woman and her 1-year-old son were fatally mauled by a polar bear. The victims in the attack were Summer Myomek and her son Clyde. The Anchorage Daily News reported that the mother and son were walking between the school building and the medical clinic when the bear entered the community and mauled the pair near the front entrance of the school building at approximately 2:30 p.m. in the afternoon. As the attack unfolded, community members and employees from the school emerged to try to scare the animal away with shovels. The polar bear chased them back into the school but slammed the door to keep it out. The bear tried to enter with them. Wales is a remote town of approximately 150 people, and this is the second attack in the last 30 years. A gentleman was killed there about 30 years ago in the same manner. Apparently, the mother and son were staying with family members while they were resolving some electrical issues in their own home and repairing them before moving back into their home. Alaska State Troopers and a representative from Alaska Department of Fish and Game traveled to Wales to investigate the attack after poor weather conditions prevented them from making the trip the day before. As of Thursday, the remains of Clyde and Summer were transported to the state medical examiner's office for autopsy. A study in 2017 found that polar bear attacks were more likely to happen during the months of July through December when ice covers the least amount of area. And then, of course, it goes into because of climate change, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, polar bears up there, polar bears are pretty territorial, and they're hunters. And it's one of man's few, you know, known predators. They can catch your scent 20 miles away, and I'm not exaggerating. So I know from visiting villages in the past, you know, a lot of times you cannot go outside of a residence unless you have an armed escort. So as an Alaskan, I find it really disturbing that, you know, nobody had a gun with them. I mean, they were trying to beat off a polar bear with shovels. I mean, this is tragic.
I know, right?
And it's so sad. And could have been prevented with the proper, you know, tools of the trade. I for one, you know, would never leave home unarmed because I'm surrounded by wolves and bears. And that's my personal responsibility. I have a personal responsibility to take care of my family, and I can't do that if I'm bear chow or wolf chow. So, you know, I did find that, you know, kind of shocking that the village safety officer wasn't present. You know, I mean, this is a school. Frankly, I'm just going to say it, I'm surprised the school didn't have a firearm accessible to an adult in from a secure area where they could have.
Yeah, like if there was ever a case to have somebody in a school that's
armed.
That would
exactly.
be it. You know, I mean, an armed school official.
Exactly.
You know, not so much for a mass shooting, but for, you know, polar bears. You know, it's like, especially in an area like that where, you know, polar bears are around. It's, you know, north enough that, you know, it's not like they don't know polar bears are around. And,
you know,
of course they want to blame climate change for it all. Of course they got to throw that in there. And maybe it's not exactly climate change. Maybe it's, you know, overfishing. Maybe, you know, their lack of food in the area due to overfishing might be a possible cause. And, of course, pollution as well. But not climate change. You know, what does climate change have to do with this? You know, polar bears usually aren't going to walk into a town full of people just to explore. You know, they're doing it because
they're hungry
and they're trying to survive.
They do,
you know?
Though, Lorianne. They're not afraid of humans. These villages, this is something that they deal with on the daily. It's a part of life. And that's what I found, concerning the fact that this was so bad. And, you know, this is so sad because this woman was just out, you know, she had stopped at the clinic. She was visiting relatives while she was staying in town. Apparently the weather was really, really bad. There was a really, really bad snowstorm and visibility was very, very low. And they claim the troopers, their investigation and witnesses claim that the mother could have hardly seen where she was going or the terror that was approaching her. And I'm reading this from a different story put out by the AP. And it claims in the coverage on this, as the attack unfolded, the principal ordered a lockdown and closed the blinds so the children couldn't see what was happening outside the entrance. Several employees and committee members left the safety of the building and tried to scare away the bear with shovels. The mauling stopped temporarily, but only when the animal turned on them and they rushed back inside. The principal slammed the door in the face of the charging bear, possibly saving lives. The polar bear was chasing them and tried to get in as well, said a witness who received frantic calls from the attack all the way up in Unalakleet, which is about 250 miles away. That was actually the closest trooper or VSO. There's no law enforcement in Wales, so with the bear still outside, a call went out to community members for help. A person who has not been identified showed up with a gun and killed the bear as it continued to maul Summer and her son. It appears the mother and toddler had no idea what was coming because of low visibility, said Alaska State Trooper spokesperson Austin McDaniel. The immediate family was living at the school temporarily while they were fixing electrical issues in their home. This is just a really sad tragedy. And you know, this is a community that's in the westernmost point of North American mainland. And it's pretty much just 50 miles from Russia across the Bering Strait. It's a very small community and it's only accessible by plane and boat. It's just a tragedy, Lorianne. And this is the type of stuff that, you know, growing up and my children growing up and stuff, it was always a concern, especially at, you know, late fall and stuff with them coming home from school and it was already dark and the bears are still out and then you get the wolves on top of that. So, yeah, this is just a horrific tragedy and I don't like to start a show out like that, but I did want to share this story with everybody because
but it's in your neck of the woods kind of and
it's
so
in my
and
neck
this, you know it's a
also,
day-to-day reality.
Yeah. So yeah, so don't mess with polar bears. They weren't messing with polar bears.
Yeah, I know.
Saying,
they might look
you know.
Cute, but they're not so cute when they've attacked somebody and killed somebody and you have to like that principal or whatever that, you know, shut the doors and shut the windows so that the kids couldn't witness this mauling, you know, that was, you know, I wonder how much those kids actually saw before he did that. You know what I mean? Like how traumatizing to witness that.
Yeah. And everybody's related there. I mean, not everybody's related, but it actually, you are pretty much related in villages like that. You know, through marriage and whatnot, very tight-knit communities. It's a community of 150. I can get it. I live in a smaller community on Prince of Wales, actually. Not Wales, but Prince of Wales. And when something happens in the community, it just numbs you for a very long time. It's hard to lose children or a young mom and a child or anything as horrific as this. It reminds you, you know, that you're not always at the top of the food chain and never, you know, it's like never turn your back on the ocean. So anyway, so I just wanted to cover that real quickly. And anyway, so on the other side of the world, the technocrats and the elites and Democrats were there over in in Switzerland attending the WEF Davos event. And there wasn't too much. They pretty much are predictable, Lorianne. I mean, you know, it's not like you're going to read anything on their meetings and go, oh, they're going to take away everything and feed us bugs. We already know that part. So the shock and awe.
Well, the purposely dumbed down populace is completely unaware of it. And they think that, when we talk about what goes on in the, you know, in Davos or World Economic Forum or Council of Foreign Relations and what their plans are, they think that we're just batshit crazy when we talk about what's literally come out of their own mouths, because they're not paying attention. They don't care, and they really should. You know, it's just like these are the power elites that are getting together and, you know, talking about, you know, how they're all going to be a part of, you know, being masters of the universe, really. And we're going to be at the effect of it. And we have been at the effect of it. All the stuff that, you know, so much of the stuff that goes on in our daily lives, from mask mandates to vaccine passports, all this stuff that has transpired over the last couple of years, this was all planned out long ago. They had exercises for exactly what went on back in, you know, 2018, 2019. So this is, you know, but, you know, we're just batshit crazy when we talk about it, because the dumbed down populace is not paying attention. But you and I, it's like old news to most everybody else out there. It definitely isn't.
Yes, certainly. And, you know, you look at the players, we have, you know, we have the Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates and Tito, whatever, from the World Health Organization. You know, we have all these players that are always there. But the attendees, World Economic Forum this year, America represented the largest amount of attendees for any country. And it wasn't just,
I wonder,
you know, politicians.
Did they jet pool? Did all of these people from the United States jet pool over there? Or did they all fly in their own personal jets to, you know, save the world?
Yeah. Well, all right, so interesting. It was, I see Senator from Washington State, Maria Cantwell. We had Kristen Sinema, Joe Manchin, James Reach, who's a Republican from Idaho, Pritzker, Whitmer, no surprise, Meeks, Democrat from New York, 5th District, Daryl Issa, Brian Kemp, which was kind of interesting, Christopher Wray, hello? I mean, why is the director of the FBI going to the World Economic Forum? I mean, what purpose does that, his attendance serve? Oh, wait. Everybody at the World Economic Forum wants to take away your free speech, and the FBI has been doing that real good. Let's see. We had Avril Haines, another interesting one. She is the U.S. Director of National Intelligence. Samantha Power, she's the administrator of the Agency for International Development. Martin Walsh, Secretary of Labor for the United States. And Catherine Tay, she's a trade representative. And then, oh, well, of course, Kerry. And he's the special presidential envoy for climate of the United States of America. Let's see, and I know Manchin was there. Yeah, Joe Manchin was there. Let's see. Maria Elvira Salazar, she's a Republican from Florida. And she was there. I recall her speaking about wanting to give amnesty to all the illegals that are here in the United States with the pathway to citizenship in so many years. Let's see here. We've got Mike Gallagher. He's a Republican from Wisconsin. Mickey Sherrill. Is it Mickey or Mikey? I'm not sure. Oh, must be Mickey.
I think it's Mikey.
Congresswoman from New... Oh, Mikey. Congresswoman from New Jersey. Seth Moulton. Congressman from a Democrat from Massachusetts. So United States had the most attendees out of all of these countries.
Did you mention Avril Haines? Did you mention Avril Haines, U.S. Director of National Intelligence?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I did.
I guess I missed that.
Oh, wait. Did I? I might have missed her. All right, because I
you,
have
yeah, you
the...
mentioned Christopher Wray of the FBI. But, yeah, Avril Haines, Director of National Intelligence. So, you know.
I didn't do it by name. Yeah, I said why the Department of. So the Wray and Haines brings a great amount of concern. I mean, what is their role in that? I mean, what is their purpose for their inclusion in this? And this
spy
list
on
names
everybody
are,
else.
Are,
spy on all the attendees.
Actual, but what this USA list I read off are just the officials. That doesn't include all of the people that buy their membership into the WEF. You know, and these executives that attend these conferences, these Klaus Schwab conferences and Davos and WEF and such, they pay $1 million and or more yearly to be members of that club. And I do not have the list of attendees that are not, I'm sure there it's out there somewhere, that are were not in an officious, you know, way. But there were many. Because, I mean, you don't see Bill Gates' name on here, and you know he was there, and all kinds of other people. So, interesting, and I'm interested, and I would encourage other people to watch for news releases and propaganda coming from Wray and Haines pertaining to this. And, you know, one of the main takeaways besides climate change was Ukraine, of course. And First Lady Zelenska was there, you know, pandering for her talking head husband who attended by a somber, you know, video green room, green screen, whatever you call it, you know, recording, wanting more money, more weapons. Nobody's doing anything. You're putting all of this on us.
You're not doing
you
enough.
Know? Yeah, you're not doing enough. So, it's
our money laundromat is running dry. You have to send us more.
Exactly. It's we know exactly, you know, what they talked about at the meetings, you know, climate change and how to suppress, you know, Americans further. You know, they're coming for your hamburgers and your steaks, coming for your guns, they're coming for your voice and your pocketbooks. And they're going to bleed everybody dry. when I was looking at the clips and stuff from the meeting and doing my research, something that really stuck out to me was the fact that everybody was wearing masks except for the attendees. So they had all the waiters and assistants and you know, lower than that, thou than them, muzzled up with black masks. And the contrast was stark, Lorianne. Very stark.
Well, of course. And that's what we saw all through it. You know, everybody else wearing masks, but, you know, if you're one of the elite, then you didn't have to. We saw that time and time and time again. And it doesn't matter, like, wasn't it who was the previous prime minister of the UK that had his wedding, his daughter's wedding. Yes, at his
Boris
daughter's
Johnson?
Wedding, and, of course, all the staff. Yes, right after, you know, mandating masks for everybody, none of the attendees of his daughter's wedding had to wear masks, but all of the staff and helpers had to. And that was such a big controversy, and yet, you know, it's just standard operating procedure now for that. You know, what makes them so exempt and nobody else?
Exactly. And, you know, these are the globalists. These are the people that showed up in so many jets that they had to utilize the military base there in Switzerland, the landing strip there, to accommodate all the jets. And it was reported one of the attendees only traveled less than 400 miles.
Yeah, and I mean, this is, you know, we got to think that this is Europe too, you know, where there are a lot of high-speed trains in Europe that people often take, you know, to go from place to place like that. You know, why couldn't they take high-speed trains? Why couldn't they just drive? You know, why did they have to take private jets and then preach to everybody about climate change and how we have to reduce carbon emissions and, you know, talk about gas crises and stuff like that, you know, when all of, you know, when they literally have so many private jets coming in for this event that they have to utilize a military base to give them enough room to land. The hypocrisy is laughable, but also infuriating. You know, you don't know whether to laugh or whether to scream, or, you know, laugh scream. I don't know if there's a term for a laugh scream.
Karen? I just Karen.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll create some new weird word,
you know,
for it, and then I'll submit it to Webster's.
Yeah, exactly. But it can be your truth.
Oh my goodness. I was just looking at the chat.
Okay.
I haven't seen that person.
From...
Hello, Get Rich, Get Out. I don't think I've seen you before.
Yeah, it looks like they joined the conversation. Yep, welcome to the show. Polar bears are deadly. They are not cute. Got to rethink. All right, well, those cute polar bears are deadly. Got to rethink cuteness. All right, so another takeaway from this WEF gathering was, of course, fact checkers on social media, you know, said not true. This is false, and the story doesn't hold any air. Well, anytime I see someone says false, I've got to do a little more research. And it was reported that the World Economic Forum founder, Klaus Schwab, you will own nothing and Mr. You will not be happy, banned vaccinated pilots from transporting World Economic Forum members in and out of Davos due to the safety risk they pose. It's very interesting because once I started looking into some of the names and players in this fact-checked story on the WEF meeting in Klaus Schwab and vaccinated pilots or unvaccinated. I ran across a group that was said in there called U.S. Freedom Flyers. So that's usfreedomflyers.org. And they're legit. And it is an amazing patriot group of aviation team players and people who ride in planes or, you know, are transported in planes. It's a group that advocates, you know, freedom, you know, from medical tyranny and being jabbed. And this group actually has, it helps people find pilots that are unvaccinated so that they can hire them and stuff. So it's kind of a charter. It started as a charter business and then turned into actually a freedom movement. So they are called freedomflyers.org. You want to check them out. I thought that was pretty cool. I was able to look into that. And, of course, Greta was there fresh after her arrest in Germany. She probably still had a little coal dust on her shoulder. Yeah.
That was such a photo op. It's like, yeah, right. It's so believable.
Right. I'm
like
sorry.
Like AOC
but,
crying outside of the Trump immigrant cages. Like, that's how fake it was, you know?
So, yeah, Greta was there fresh after her arrest. It was interesting because now when, you know, they are the World Economic Forum, for whatever reason, they do not seem to be interested in fixing this recession that we're feeling here in the United States, although the planted puppets in, you know, the White House, he refuses to say the R word. All of them, Janet Yellen, all of them, we're not going to say the R word. So all these super smart people supposedly and the 1% all meet in Davos, you know, the World Economic Forum. And all they could discuss for almost a week was how to repress you, myself and Lorianne and all you guys out there financially, socially, you know, at your dinner table. I mean, we're all feeling it. Everybody's feeling this oppression by these people. They were all together for a week, mind you, and they didn't come up with one solution for the crisis. The only thing they could do was warmonger, Lorianne, and think of ways to extort more money out of people. And you know they're feeling it. With the crypto market crunch like it's, you know, it has, and I mean, collectively, they say that a lot of those members, collectively, they've lost about $1.4 trillion in privately amongst themselves.
That's huge.
In investment. That's a huge amount of money. It's interesting because, you know, they're trying to push this blockchain and this digital currency and crypto, and they want everybody to use it. And they don't want to use it. They're not trying to try. Well, they want a one-world economy, a one-world everything. But it is the gateway to total control. It is the gateway to a social credit system. And we do not, none of us, I don't care if you're in the United States right now listening to this or Canada or, you know, we do broadcast all over the world. So anywhere that you're listening, they're out to get you too. So this isn't an American problem. This isn't a problem that we can vote our way out of problem. And you know, once you lose hard currency, something that you can trade, it's like losing your voice. Because since somebody can monitor or limit or control everything you buy, everything you consume, and there is a trail,
ammo.
Yeah, exactly. Anything. body armor. a sharp axe. Oh, a gas stove.
Oh my God.
But yeah, 2022 was terrible for crypto, and people, there's this, you know, and I'm not saying crypto's dead by all means, but I'm hoping this will slow down the agenda just a little bit, you know, slow it down a little bit. Because at
you know
this
a
rate,
little, but no, there's you know
yeah,
it's not going to. I mean, the omnibus bill, the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, which pumps more money into all of these causes. You know, it pumps money into climate change initiatives, which of course you know that's a part of what's going on in Davos. Which I know you wanted to get to, but, you know, they're talking, you know, about these 15-minute cities and that Britain is now protesting against. But even further in Davos, they're talking about five-minute cities, where their plan is to take, you know, these cities that are spread out and go vertical so everything is within 5 minutes. And you have these huge high rises that go up and up and up and up that have all, you know, your stores and your living quarters and your gyms and everything you need in this vertical city. And, you know, so I was reading about that and I was just like, really, seriously, this is where they want to go. Like 15 minutes isn't enough. They want to go 5 minutes, make these vertical cities like this. And, like, I'm reading this and I'm going, this is, like, the fifth element, you know, this is what they want. Remember the scene in The Fifth Element, Bruce Willis, you know, and he goes to escape his little apartment and, you know, and he jumps in his car and it's like, and you have to go down and down and down and down and down and down and down, you know, because everything's vertical. It's like they're taking the fifth element and they want to make that into reality.
Yeah, and when you look at, you know, the history of ghettos, and I'm not talking about, you know, the ghettos you hear about in our, you know, rap songs and stuff. I'm talking about the original ghettos. For example, Venice was one of the places, and it started out as actually a tradesman, a foundry, and it was the Jewish ghetto. And it had nothing to do with segregation or anything. It just turned out to be an enclave. And everything that these people needed were within their ghettos. So if you, and I've been to Venice, and Venice is, no bicycles, there's no cars. Of course, everybody knows there's no cars, but there's no bicycles either because there's like bridges, there are stairs, and it's just crazy. But each little kind of block area has its own store, it has its own clinic, it's got its own, you know, a couple places of worship, and it's they're segregated out, and the model for that, you know, spread into modern time, and the, you know, development engineering of them here in modern day, even America. But these 15-minute cities are kind of interesting because if you live in, did we get that clip uploaded on the 15-minute cities?
Pretty sure. Yeah,
yes,
I did.
I just found it. Yep, I just found it. Yeah, I wanted to play it because this clip is, it's not very long, I promise, folks. It's just, you know, a few minutes long, but they kind of lay it out for what it is. But when you live in it, when you're looking for real estate, say, for example, in Seattle or Portland or in New York, a lot of these listings will give you a pedestrian rating. So it'll be like, and how it's rated is, you know, by, is there a grocery store in the neighborhood? Is there a bus stop? Is there a hospital or clinic? And that ups the you know, pedestrian living score. And you actually pay a little bit more to live in a, you buy a condo and your job's down the street and you got, you know, three or four watering holes you like on, you know, and in the neighborhood. And it's easy to, and groceries, food too, but it's easy to stay within your perimeters and you get into your comfort zone. Well, this isn't about being comfortable. And it's not about actually saving the planet at all. It's a form of control. And this interview spells it out really well. So this is one of the main topics at the Davos retreat this year. So we're going to go ahead and play that for you folks right now. And stay with us. If you want to join the conversation, the phone number is 515-602-9722. Press number 1. And we'll be right back after this little clip. So listen up because we're going to be discussing this.
The Green Agenda is taking inspiration from the illiberal days of lockdown. What's happening in Oxford?
Well, Oxford has something called a 15-minute city that they want to implement. We have already been told by Duncan Enright, who's got the title as a cabinet as being the head of transport and development, but actually seems to not want to do too much development and only want certain kinds of transport. What they want to do, now bear in mind that Oxford already has lots of LTNs, low traffic neighbourhoods, which we've seen happen all across the country. There's been gridlock in places like Haringey and in Brixton, and we'll come back to that. But they have a number of LTNs that have really suffocated local businesses and residents. And now they're saying what they want to have is bus gates. They call them all a trial. They say it's a trial. When they did, but they have bus gates, which will mean you can't drive in many arteries, and you're only allowed 100 passes a year. So if you have two cars, that means 50 each, to go to certain areas, and you otherwise have to go much further around a whole ring road. So it's meaning that people's journeys that are really important are getting massively delayed. There's far more pollution. It's allegedly to stop some pollution, they say, but there's pollution often in very rundown areas. Many people in East Oxford, who are much more, they're much poorer, much more run down, they don't have facilities around them in 15 minutes to walk to. So once again, ordinary people are being punished more. But the thing that's most problematic with this in Oxford, and we're seeing it happen in some other cities across the UK, is that when consultations go out, like they have done with the low traffic neighbourhoods, the majority of people are responding saying no. 5,600 respondents in Oxford responded. And if you look at, there was a Freedom of Information form, if you look at the responses on some, over 3,600 were negative on one of them, which constituted 93%. In spite of all of that, and also people going around saying that, you know, there were representatives saying the majority of people believe in this, businesses have challenged it, residents have challenged it, and they're still going ahead. And they're calling it all a trial, and but the trial of the 15-minute city can't exist without the trial of the LTNs. And as Duncan and Mike said, it's happening anyway. Now, another thing to note about this, where this has come from is that the International C40s, which is mayors internationally, who Sadiq Khan is currently the chair of that, so they're from around the States and other countries internationally, we've got a declaration to tackle the emergency climate crisis.
Right.
As though the issue in cities is not better hospitals or housing or infrastructure or transport or any of those things, but it's this crisis. It's almost like a perpetual state of crisis rather than a sober addressing of how we deal with things if there are some conditions that we need to change. And he, in London, Sadiq Khan, who's the current mayor, who's now saying he's going to stand for a third term, has said, well, even though 73% responded against ULEZ expansion, where you have taxi drivers and, again, working class people being impacted in their areas, and it's another tax on drivers and impositions, even though we said that, well, it's not a referendum, I'm not really that interested, I'm not doing it like that, utterly undemocratic, a whole patrician attitude. We've seen that, you know, the Muslim community in Oxford can't get to the mosque, elderly people and others. And what's going to be happening is, I know certainly at Together, we have a lot of signatories in members in Oxford, in Edinburgh, in Cardiff and in Canterbury, where these things are all happening. They are organising and they're getting vocal. And I think that people should realise that, you know, you might think that this is a done deal, but a lot of people are very unhappy. And it, just as lockdown has finished and we've gone through all of this and all these businesses are suffering, now a lot of them are being killed by this, and it's really, really wrong.
Does it sound to you, Stephanie, like, oh, this benevolent thing, we're going to save the planet and it's not going to be huge in position, but it's got this coercive undertow with no lack of choice, and as Alan's just explained so brilliantly, no lack of democracy in this decision-making process?
Well, absolutely. I think that's one of the most objectionable concerning things, is the fact that any objections from residents is or will be overruled. But I think, you know, we've spent much of the morning talking about freedom of speech. This is about freedom of choice, the choice to use whatever transport that is available to you that you can afford, as to how you move. I think we're all agreed that, of course, there is a climate emergency. We're all agreed that we need to...
I don't think we are. That kind of sentence troubles me. I think we all agree that we need to look after our planet, you know, dispose of your waste. Let's not fill our seas with plastic. Let's have clean water. Let's try and have clean air where possible. But that's what I think this is all predicated on, this idea that there is an emergency and therefore we have to change the minutiae of our life. We have to go back to that, don't we?
Well, absolutely. But this strategy that's been deployed or thought up by this group that Alan referenced, perhaps takes into consideration all of that, but what it doesn't do, or the concern is, it doesn't take into account the more vulnerable parts of our society in terms of trying to implement a policy that is for the good of the planet and so forth, but not thinking about the real everyday life implications of deploying this policy.
I'm not, you know, of course we worry about the vulnerable in society, of course we do. But this doesn't, I'm not objecting to this on that basis. I want all members of society to have freedom to go around everywhere. It will impact on your right if you're a wheelchair user maybe and you can't just hop on a bicycle like Sadiq Khan thinks we all can in the morning, or you know, taking the kids to swimming club via the supermarket. You can't do that on a bicycle or particularly on a bus. It's completely detached from real life.
Yeah.
So what should people do, Alan?
Well, I think in the first instance, in each of the cities, there are already established groups who've been challenging LTNs and the 15-minute city.
That's low-traffic neighbourhoods.
Neighbourhoods, yeah. And there's a number of campaigns that are happening in London and across the country. In Oxford, there are going to be some more things happening. On January 24th, the council is going to be stating how this next thing's going to be rolled out. And just to say, they have a plan that both for the hospital and the schools... there's going to be an additional tax on car parks. So key workers, teachers, nurses and others, are now going to be charged double the amount to bring their cars in. Oxford's already, in many areas, not a livable city for key workers.
Yeah.
This is going to be imposed on them. This is by a mixture of Labour, Lib Dems and Green, but actually the Conservatives wanted it as well. This whole idea that we're caring and considerate, what tends to happen all the time is it's being impacted on the worst off. And so there's going to be a discussion about what happens with that. But I have a hunch that a lot of people, because I've seen already the groups that are there organised, and a lot more are going to be challenging and asking questions. I think people can put pressure on their local councillors and on their MPs and on the government. And we at Together are going to be representing some of our signatories and members in different cities, but also bringing this to national government, because the whole way that we do our transport, infrastructure, housing, business are all interrelated.
And
this final point on net zero, everyone seems to think that it's a done deal, and yet I think it needs much more critical attention.
The whole thing does, and you know what, you won't really hear the BBC talking about Oxford's plans, you won't really hear the other channels discussing it. We're talking about it because it really affects you, and that's what's really important, and it will all happen without you having any consent.
Okay, so we're back. All right, so what that boils down to, Lorianne, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. So what that kind of boils down to are these, you know, enclaves and mini cities or neighborhoods that are restricted. You know, that is just one model of how these 15-minute cities would work. But where, for example, you know, you only have so many passes for your car to get in and out the shortest way. So this is, you know, and then also you have people, what if there's not a supermarket or a place to buy food besides the local, you know, convenience store, bodega type incident? You know, that is going to put a impact nutritionally and financially on all families and hurt the working class more than anything. And they're going to have to hop on a bus to go to a grocery store somewhere. And yeah, that's going to take, you know, fuel and carbon and all that other crap. So this is not about the environment or climate. It's about control. And look at the lockdowns, folks. Please don't ever forget that so recently in our history, we were all, you know, subjected to tyranny, unbearable tyranny, in some places more than others. I'm so grateful to be here in the United States where we were able to push back and find some, you know, form of footing and push back against our governments. We're not going to, you know, do this. I'm not going to comply. But other countries such as New Zealand and China and the list goes on, they faced, you know, years-long draconian lifestyles. And it's easier to control people in this manner. What's your thoughts on Marianne?
Yeah, I mean, I remember when, you know, these lockdowns first started, you know, the 2 weeks to slow the curve, you know, which turned into a month, which turned into 6 months, you know, and the mask mandates and, you know, the curfews and all that. We were saying even back then that this is an experiment, a worldwide experiment, to see how far they can really go. And we are seeing the fruition of that happening now, you know, and I hate to keep saying that we were right. You know, we didn't know back then exactly what the game plan was. We knew it was a test run for something, you know, for mass population control. But now here we're seeing it. Now that, you know, they've been emboldened after all the COVID lockdowns, now they're emboldened to make these 15-minute cities or 5-minute cities, using climate change as the next rationale for it, and here we are, you know, and, you know, you're going to be, you know, you can start forgetting about, you know, when you used to travel to go visit your family for Christmas, you know, you're probably only going to be allotted, you know, so much for travel like that, so, you know, you better plan yourself wisely, you know. If you want to go visit your, you know, go have a family reunion for your grandma's 75th birthday, well, you know, that's going to be docked against you with your allotment, so plan accordingly. I mean, that's, you know, this is the kind of thing we're talking about. And like they said in that clip, it doesn't matter what the local businesses and local people are saying and what they want. They're going to spin it and still lie and say the majority of the people support this. You know, and this is going to happen here too, where it's going to be, you know, what the government officials and our paid for, bought off government, our, you know, propaganda, our media says. And then there's going to be what, you know, people really think, boots on the ground. And as we saw with, you know, like the truckers convoy, the mass media barely reported on it. And then when they finally did report on it, it was everywhere because, oh, there was a Nazi flag in the crowd, you know, obviously planted by somebody. And that's all you heard about it, you know. So they spun it to be like, oh, it's all white supremacists and stuff like that. So whenever there is a legitimate rising of the people against some of this stuff, it's either A, not reported on, or B, it's set up to, you know, make them look bad and therefore not give any legitimacy to it.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, they're the biggest bunch of hypocrites in the world because you have, you know, one of the attendees was Microsoft, and they hosted a Sting performance. They hired Sting to do a private show for about 50 attendees. It was a very intimate gathering, and it included the, you know, company's top executives, who got a while away the evening listening to a performance by Sting, only to, you know, inform the company, inform the employees the next day that 10,000 of them would be laid off. You know, and to make it even a bigger sting, I think the Economic Forum's theme this year was sustainability. You know, so that's not very sustainable, and that doesn't reflect well. It doesn't look well. You know, here we're hobnobbing in Switzerland on our private jet. No, by the way, you don't have a job. But hey, I got to see Sting, you know, with 49 of my good friends. You know, and it's not only Microsoft. You've got Microsoft laid off 10,000. Twitter laid off about 80% of their workforce. What was their number?
Oh,
like,
there is
got
quite
what?
A list. I had looked up a list, like, you know, we're seeing it one and another, but when you start looking at the big picture of how much is actually going on, Google is going to be planning
12,000
layoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft, as you mentioned, 10. Amazon laying off 18,000. DirecTV laying off 10% of its management, which accounts for about half of its total workforce. Salesforce is laying off 7,000 people, about 10% of its workforce. Google, Amazon, Carta, Coinbase laying off
Twitter
20%. Goldman Sachs laying off 8%. Twitter, you know, we don't even know how many total Twitter's going to be yet because the plans are to be on a basic, skeleton crew type of staff at Twitter with Musk plans. Even DoorDash. DoorDash laying off approximately 1,250 employees. Representing 6% of its staff. DoorDash, which obviously, you know, made a lot of money with all of the lockdowns. Then, of course, Facebook, 11,000. Zillow, the retail, Zillow is laying off 5% of its employees. Netflix laying off about 2%. Coinbase laying off 18%. Cisco last year, Cisco laid off 5% of its employees. The list just goes on and on and on and on. This is something that people need to take notice of because I really think that this is going to lay some groundwork for Biden either A, stepping down, or B, deciding not to run for 2024 because he was boasting all those job numbers, you know, taking credit for all the job numbers after all of the lockdowns and all of the trillions of dollars going into businesses to try to keep their doors open and stuff. And so he's boasting about all of those numbers, you know, last year and then early last year. And now, you know, like, look at me, I created so many jobs. And do you think Biden's going to turn around and go, look at me, you know, look at all these layoffs, you know?
Yeah, well, that's something we discussed a little bit earlier, you know, before the show, was the fact that how are they going to spin these job numbers? I guarantee you folks, you're not going to see these poor job numbers show up in the next report, because I don't think the reports we've gotten are factual or correct to begin with. You know, what we're hearing, the true job numbers. So that's something
exactly.
that, you know, we're definitely going to have to, you know, keep our eyes on. Yeah, I don't know. So they're at it. They're over there in Davos plotting their next move, you know, cooking up God only knows what for us minions. But, you know, we've got our eyes on them. We know what their you know, agenda is. And I'm hoping that, you know, collectively throughout the world, their eyes are opening. And they're able to see, you know, and I'm speaking to all of you out there, this is not something that anybody can vote their way out of. I think your strongest defense, your, you know, tool that you can have in your tool chest right now is to not comply. Just say no. No, I will not put a mask on. No, I will not, you know, lock myself in my home. No, I will not eat bugs. No.
Yeah,
don't let them convince you.
You know, it's just like, this goes out to all the people that supported the lockdowns and the quarantines and the restrictions on how many people can be in a store at once, and all the people that supported the red X's, you know, so that when you're standing in line at the checkout, you're 6 feet apart, and all the people that cheered for the mask mandates and all the people that cheered for the vaccine mandates and stuff. This goes out to all of you. This is exactly what you have allowed to happen, is now they're moving on to an even bigger plan, an even bigger tyranny to control the populations. And if you don't wise up now, you are going to allow them to convince you that all of the stuff that they're planning is a good thing. They're going to convince you to start cheering for the exact tyranny that is going to lock you down forever and lock down your children forever, and even worse as time goes on. So this message goes out to you. Wake up now, because it is time to wake up. If you haven't woken up by now, you're going to have to, because if you don't, your children and your grandchildren are going to be paying the price for your lack of even being willing to see what's behind this curtain that they're pulling over your eyes.
Yes. And, you know, at the very same time, and I see Be Wise as Serpents, in the chat room. Yes, Biden may already be dead, along with Hillary and all of them. I've always considered him just to be the meat puppet. So I'm not quite sure what Biden really is. You know, he might be a cyborg.
Man from Poltergeist 2 in Manifested.
Yeah.
They took the old man from Poltergeist 2 and morphed him into President of the United States.
Yeah, so he's just a meat puppet, Be Wise as Serpents. So, Biden's just a real piece of work. I see Aleph Lamed has joined us. Welcome to the show. And he agrees, Be Wise as Serpents. So our chat room is open, and we welcome everybody to leave their comments and or questions. You are welcome to call into the show. The number is 515-602-9722, press number 1. So I want to go on. We're going to kind of segue out of the World Economic Forum stuff. But while we're looking at the international stage, there's been a few surprising political upsets lately. And at first I was like, yeah, let's get this crazy bitch out of New Zealand. Jacinda Ardern, one of the most dangerous women alive, Prime Minister of New Zealand, is stepping down. She's resigning. Okay, we've got New Zealand. Number two, we have Taiwan. Taiwan Prime Minister stepping down. Number three, the president of Vietnam stepping down. These are three very important geopolitical players in the last month that have stepped down. And at first I was like, yay, getting Ardern out of, you know, gosh, these people in New Zealand, they're finally safe, you know. You know, I mean, thanks be to God. I mean, these people have been put through hell, just hell. Draconian style lockdowns, you know, you can only walk your dog, only one family member, and right down to how many beer you could buy, you know, and just lockstep with China. And we watched it all, you know, play out. And then I was started looking at who's replacing Jacinda Ardern. And boy, oh boy, really concerning. He was, let's see here. His name's Chris Hipkins. And he will be stepping in to fill in the rest of Ardern's term. And he is the person who was a key player. He was the he created the response to the scamdemic there. So all those draconian lockdowns, all of that was his doing. Not his doing, but, you know, his circus. And just when I started thinking, you know, the people in New Zealand finally caught a break. They're going to break free from the chains of this tyranny and regain their footing and take their, you know, beautiful country back. Lori-Ann, it doesn't look like it's going to be so.
No, they're just replacing one tyrant for another, you know, and unfortunately, that's what happens all too often. You know, well, this tyrant looks better, so we'll support this guy.
Exactly. And, you know, it was a surprise that Ardern stepped down. And she just claims that she's burnt out, that she just doesn't have any more, you know, petrol in the tank to go another mile. So with
yeah, you know, who would have
in,
thought that being a tyrant that leads an entire country could be so exhausting?
Yeah, so now the poor New Zealanders are putting up with this guy. You know, in 2020, he was appointed the health minister before becoming the COVID response minister by the end of that year. And currently, before his new posting, he was the Minister for Police, Education, and Public Service, as well as Leader of the House. It shows that he is one of the more popular potential candidates amongst voters, which I find really concerning because I can't imagine anybody voting for more of that. But if their elections are anything like the U.S., elections, then they can just pick a party and, you know, pick their puppet and do what they want. We've seen that happen here. So, and of course, you know, he's a member of the Green Party, so he's, you know, just going to hop right into that. So, yeah, to New Zealand, my heart bleeds for you, but, you know, you're on your own. You got to step up. You've got to say, no, we're not going to do this. We'll not comply. We're not going to, you know, buy into this crap. Because nobody's coming to save you either. And it doesn't sound like you guys can vote your way out of this. So I would just collectively rise up and push back, because that's your only hope. Now, moving on to Taiwan. The new prime minister there, his name's Tianjin. And Tianjin is a epidemiologist and the mastermind behind Taiwan's COVID response. Are you seeing this theme here, Lorianne?
I'm getting a sneaky suspicion that there's a pattern.
Yeah, we've got a pattern going on. Now, Vietnam, that one is not so clear what's going on there. Now, that's been kind of unraveling for the last month. What I was able to ascertain is that all of a sudden there's allegations of corruption, and two main ministers for the party were removed under the president, and the vice president is currently serving pro tempore. However, I couldn't find what the allegations were in any news source, and they have not been, none of them have been charged with crimes. So that means, you know, true to Chinese, you know, whatever, because Taiwan is closely related, not saying they're the same, but, you know, you can be disappeared easily. So, what I was able to gather from my research today was that this person that stepped in to President Fuchs' position is, wrong country. I'm doing Vietnam now in my head. The one that's stepping up in Taiwan is Tianjin, and they're very sympathetic to China and want to get along with them and may not have such cozy relations with the U.S. And that is cause, and they are also, upon the announcement of the change of guard within Taiwan, they immediately, although they don't have a cozy relationship with the United States, they are brokering deals to buy a lot of land-based Terry infrastructure. And there was also reports, and this is a rumor, but, you know, plausible source information that it most likely true, that U.S. is already sending over military personnel to train the Taiwanese on land-based infantry and war games. So that's something that, you know, we definitely need to keep our eyes on. Because these are not, you know, people that are just benign and warmed body. I see V in the guest queue, and we're V in to join the conversation.
Oh, hello.
V, welcome into the show.
Hi.
V.
I just didn't think you were going to. Pick me? I don't know. What's the right word? Pick up. I'm over here like...
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just listening. No. That was good. I was like... I mean, you should have heard me when I saw that you made the connection between all of these people who are taking place of those draconian leaders. I was going to say, I thought Jacinda, whatever the hell her name is, from New Zealand, stepped down because she was doing crystal meth. I didn't think that she was... leaving because she was tired. I'm tired watching you get high on crystal meth, bitch. Like, get out the fucking spot. I gotta get pregnant, girl, man. This is bad, man. All right. I'm trying. I went to the store at 7-Eleven for my coworker, and that's why I was like sneaking, listening to y'all.
Oh, you're being sneaky.
Well,
So
great to hear from you, though.
Yeah.
I love it when you get when you can break away and call in, and yeah, I'm sensing a pattern. And, you know, with Taiwan, you know, it wouldn't be the first time that the U.S. gets involved to, you know, overthrow a government and put people in that they want, especially with the Taiwan-China conflict going on and us, you know, getting involved there. So, you know, typical to our U.S. government, how much you want to bet that we have a hand involved in what's going on there.
But, you know, that this ball pattern, that made me think, you know how we got rid of Cuomo with that super ridiculous scandal that was really a nothing burger?
Yes.
And they replaced him with Hochul, who's way more progressive than he will ever be. Like, he's an old school liberal, but she's like way more like left. And she's worse for New York as far as the living, not the elderly, just every age group in general. But like, they seem to always replace people with someone who's worse. Like, for example, if Joe Biden gets impeached or if he steps down because of this whole little BS scandal with the classified documents. And I say it's not BS, but I mean, compared to what he's done with his son, if they get rid of him and Kamala takes over, she's way more progressive and way worse, way more liberal. So this seems to be like a thing where they replace people with someone who's worse. And just we thought we had it bad. You know, I think 2023 is going to be a worse year. Everybody's like, oh, right, we got the pandemic behind us. No, we don't.
No, we don't. Nope. No, that's the problem. You know, these elites and these politicians are the pandemic.
Right.
You know, they are the problem.
Well, you know,
problem.
I would imagine that there are already teams of people on the Republican side that are already digging up any and everything that can be used as a scandal against Kamala, because if she is installed as president, they need to bring her down. And I think that Democrats will get on board with that too, because Democrats never even wanted her anyways. It was like, you know, the only reason why Biden chose her was number one, her skin color, and number two, nobody wants her and a guarantee that he wouldn't be assassinated. and so, you know, and so nobody wants her to be in, but if she does get in, it would be hopefully it'll probably be very short timing, and she'll get unseated because of some kind of scandal or something too, and either have to resign, or get booted out. And, you know, but now the Democrats are kind of in a conundrum because, you know, which I think is why McCarthy was chosen as a House Speaker, as third in line to the presidency, because he's a rhino and everybody knows it. And I think the Democrats and Republicans would rather have a President McCarthy than a President Harris, to be quite honest with you. So, I mean, I think the writing's on the wall there.
And I have to say that's kind of what would lead into this whole, you know, world leader shakeup is, and we have the timing of these documents, these classified documents that Biden had. I don't think there's anything surprising with this meat puppet. There's nothing he could do that would surprise me, including having classified documents in a house rented by Hunter Biden stored in the garage. But hey, the garage was locked, man. But was the timing of the revelation of this, that is what is the most, was that these documents were, the timing and discovery, how they were discovered, by who they've been handled by, I should say. So we got a November 2nd discovery, nobody say anything until 2023. And then you have not the FBI, not the Department of Justice, but his private lawyers handling these. These people
right.
do not have the legal authority to have
nope,
those
clear.
In their possession. In fact, they right. are, it's illegal for them. They're breaking the law by touching them.
That's right. Thank you. They don't have the clearance
Amen.
For that. And what if they opened it and they read it? All of that matters.
And you know they did.
They should be arrested as well.
You know they did.
For having them even in their possession and moving them. And the way that the media, oh, my God, it's so infuriating. They're like, well, at least he found them and turned them in. Like, you know, they, as soon as they discovered them, what were they doing with them in the first place? Nobody wants to answer that question. And they're like, well, Trump refused. I see no evidence of anywhere, and I look for it, saying that Trump refused to do anything with these documents. If anything, it seems like his team was completely cooperating with the police with regards to that.
The
it's
FBI.
So frustrating. Right.
We don't like that these are locked up. You need to lock them up and even more securely, and Trump does it, and then next thing you know, he's raided. But Biden can have them sitting there in his garage, which now finally the Secret Service discloses that, oh, yeah, by the way, we do have some visitor log of the Biden house, you know, so we can see who went in and out. But they're not asking, like, how many years have these documents been sitting there in boxes in the garage, unaccounted
right.
for and unnoticed? I'm sorry, I have shit in my garage. I know what's in there. I know what's in the boxes that are in my garage that have been sitting there for 7 years since I bought my house. How the hell do you not know what's in the boxes in your own garage that's been sitting there for years? Come on now.
Right, and then another whataboutism that the people in the media or the people who defend Biden do is they count the number of pages that Joe Biden has compared to the boxes and thousands of pages that Trump had. Not only that, they really forget that Trump had the power to declassify anything that was in his possession, which he claims that he did, and Biden didn't have that authority. He doesn't have a library. He doesn't get the memoirs, you know, and that book deal. So I'm so frustrated with going around and around. You can't say anything, especially on Twitter. And I know, Lorianne, you hate Twitter. It's such a shit show.
I love
but
Twitter. That's where I go to pick on people, poke the bear.
These people defend Biden to no end. And, you know, I blame the media because these are cleaned up people in suits. They're highly educated, so to speak. They've got their, you know, their supposedly their credentials in journalism and God knows what else. I think they're all just a bunch of attorneys. They're really good at lying. And they seem like they're telling the truth. Why would they lie? You know, with a straight face.
Yeah,
with millions of viewers.
I would go out on the limb because you're a critical thinker. You know, what I'm curious about is the classified documents that Biden has, are they Biden's or are they Obama's? And
right.
should have the vice president had them to begin with? I know that the vice president has given, you know, clearance for stuff and received confidential documents. I'm not, you know, wasn't born today. But knowing Biden and the crime family, I'm just curious. And I think that it's not so much the content, but who the documents were meant for, you know, maybe the content as well, will be the undoing of Biden. And I'm watching these other key players around the world crumble before us, and I foresee the Biden administration doing. They're going to cave in on themselves. The meat puppet is completely decaying before our eyes, and
right.
they cannot maintain the straight anymore. I mean, they've lost control of the narrative, and now this is Plan B, and they've got to get rid of him some way. And
did you see the
what
video
they're going to do?
Viral?
It,
I'm sorry,
which one?
No, no, go ahead. I'll tell you. I won't forget. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Which one?
The one where they it looks like his back is breathing.
Ew, gross.
Right.
No, you can't. No, that's what I was saying. You know, is he a cyborg? Is he human? I mean, reptilian? I mean, I have so many questions. But this is where it is interesting. Lorianne, you sent a message?
Anyway, yeah, I sent it in the wrong window.
Oh,
I clicked on one window and it ended up on yours. And anyway.
Okay. Anyways, though, what's interesting is with McCarthy and the House speakership, and we were just discussing how he's a rhino. You know, I didn't support him being in that position at all. I can see right through him. I believe that they conceded. They allowed him, the swamp and the Democrats and everybody allowed him in that position because he'll end up as vice president one way or another. Just watch it. And they will blame the Republicans for everything. They're going to say that we planted all the documents just a way to further cause this, you know, divisive narrative that they've been peddling.
Right.
And to continue with their agenda.
Oh, yes. I'm sure that Trump himself waddled his way into that garage and planted some classified documents, and then he scooted on over to that think tank in Pennsylvania that Biden had offices in, and he snuck some of them in there too.
They really stupid, man. It's sad that, you know, the way that the people extol and uphold the idea that somebody's college educated or a professional in an area, so that means they're honest and they have some level of integrity. It's caca.
Yes, I agree. You know, and we're conditioned that way.
Right.
You know, just societally and the way that we're raised generationally, you know, we're conditioned to, you know, oh, you're a doctor? Wow. Or, oh, you're a rocket scientist? Wow. Or a police officer? You must be really trustworthy, which I'm sure a lot of them are. You don't go into that field just because you want to make a lot of money, because you're not going to make a lot of money, and it's a huge public service, and they're putting their lives on the line. So, but still, I know, because you work for the police force. So I totally know that. And our, you know, I mean, so, but we do. And people of power, though, take advantage of people that are not in power. And it would do these politicians well to remember that they don't really have power. They've been, you know, voted by the people, you know, as will the people. It doesn't mean that you're a powerful people or person. It means that you're supposed to be in a form of, you know, service.
Right.
So, I think,
working
in law enforcement, you have firsthand knowledge of, you know, in direct experience. You probably know better than anyone that there are people that work in law enforcement that really have no business working in law enforcement. And
yeah,
sometimes you have to even answer to them.
Yeah. Mhm. That's true. And it's very clicky. You know, people, there's a lot of nepotism, and I see that that's the case everywhere, especially with politics or in Hollywood and the entertainment industry. People really look out for their kids, cousins, nephews, you know, niece and all those people, but they don't really earn it. You know, you don't work hard to get it. I'm thankful to be almost rid of this career and have it behind me, honestly. The only reason why I don't have my own show is because this, you know. I can't.
Yep.
Because I'll say some dumb shit and I'll get strung up and reported. I mean, they already treat us like criminals, so we don't have the liberty and the freedom to speak. It's funny because I had like one of those Reiki sessions two of them, and they both said, your throat chakra is really tight, like you're keeping stuff in, you're not speaking your mind. I was like, well, yes.
I'm muzzled for a job.
Yeah. Can't speak my mind. That's for
damn sure.
Well,
you know who to talk to when you do want to start your own show, you know.
Yes. It's so funny. Absolutely. It's just,
Before we get too far into things, there is only 19 minutes left to call into the show. And be a part of overtime, because I have a feeling we probably won't get into overtime too late, but so there's 18 minutes left to call into the show, 515-602-9722 if you're out there listening, and I'll hand the microphone back over to Dolan V.
Yeah. We do have another caller holding, and I'm going to bring the caller in. I think it's Think for Yourself, but I could be wrong.
Or it could be John Doe.
Welcome into the show. Yeah. Welcome into the show.
John Doe. How are you, Doll?
John Doe. I'm well, thank you.
Hey there, John.
You guys are always shitting
on all
cylinders.
And we've got V on the conversation, too.
How's V doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Well, you all sound good. But, hey, there's one aspect that I didn't hear you guys talking about. When you talk about these classified documents, since it's my opinion, since 1804, they've continued to use this classified top secret, secret access program nonsense as just a cloak for the robber barons who are in those positions of influence and power, to pull their nefarious mischief against us in secret. We've got to break down. If we're all, we the people, independent, self-governing, free people, then we own governing in unity. Unity of title, unity of possession, unity of property, unity of time. And every one of us has a right to know everything about our property and our business in order to make well-informed decisions to direct our administrators and managers who are under a fiduciary agency relationship with us to manage our property as we see fit and do us no harm so we can pursue our pursuit of happiness without harming others, and we can hold others accountable to not harm us while they pursue their pursuit of happiness. But when they deny us that information, we cannot make well-informed decisions, and then whenever we do want to get a redress for grievance and they deny us a redress of grievance, you know, that due process, good faith bargaining, good faith negotiating, mutuality of agreement, freedom of contract, freedom of conscience, freedom of association, that's extrinsic fraud, it's undue influence, it's coercion, it's duress, exploitation. They've already nullified the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, so therefore we got to quit giving them this opportunity to have secret, classified, you know, special access nonsense and withhold that information from us. That's how they're getting away with doing MK Ultra, you know, the Mockingbird Project, InThread, Solar Winds, you name it. All these programs that we find out way after fact that they've been doing in the background, scamming we the people and continuing to rip us off and defraud us. So you get where I'm coming from?
I hear that.
Yeah, and, you know, speaking of classified documents, Biden is again delaying the release of classified CIA documents surrounding the JFK assassination, too. You know, you've got to keep asking yourself, why do they keep putting off releasing that?
Exactly. Well, any of it. It's because they want to do, I mean, I understand their arguments, but the point of it is we the people have to have this conversation about these sensitive issues to figure out how to better get a grasp on being independent, self-governing, free people and stop the people that get into these positions of authority, and then they abuse that authority, and now they're not fit to manage anything. They run our country in the ground. Every time you turn around, they're doing some kind of nefarious nonsense. They can't manage the programs that we have as it is. So it's like, why are we giving them any more responsibility or power of any kind?
I agree. You know, and you look at, you know, Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, they're both abusing their powers. And the sad thing is I didn't give them, I was no fan of the Patriot Act, you know, but out of fear, people signed up lock, stock, and barrel for, oh, you know, only the government can keep us safe, and allowed the Justice Department to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And they're the greatest threat to our democracy at this point. And they're not even elected officials. This country was never meant to be run this way.
And they keep letting the media manipulate us and pointing fingers back and forth about all this stuff, you know, whether Trump was right about what he did, or I don't care if they have the information or not. My problem is they're not allowing me to have the same information and you to have all the same information. They, as a self-governing, independent, free person, should have access to that information for them to make a well-informed decision about how their property, you know, because the private property, the self-governing of you is your private property, self-governing of me is my private property, and you and I should have full access to anything and everything directly and indirectly related to manipulation or managing of that property in order for you to, as an owner, and to exercise your ownership rights to manage that property the way that best serves you without doing others harm and without doing you harm, and you still be able to pursue your happiness. And they're no different. It's just you and I are being excluded. They're getting access.
Yes. There. You know, so I guess, you know, the takeaway from this is that it's not, you know, what, like I said, really what was in the documents. What's in the documents is pretty irrelevant. I mean, China's already probably had their way with them at the Penn Center, and Ukraine and China had their way with them in Biden's garage, probably right in the back of the Corvette. I don't think that that's irrelevant with the site of, with the rocket that they found, you know, of Biden's son's Hunter's in the back of that said Corvette, but not what's in them, but the fact that it's been concealed and it's been obstructed, and just the discovery and chain of custody of these documents that are so, you know, critical to national security have been mishandled. Like V and I were talking about, you know, how it's been handled is completely illegal. Like his private lawyers, Joe Biden's lawyers. I mean, I don't know who's a bigger liar, the lawyer or Joe Biden, you know, I mean. So, just because of nature, you know, but you can't believe either one of them.
Right?
Yeah, they are all attorneys.
Talk about job security. Talk about job security if you're one of Biden's lawyers that are given access to this classified information. Well, there's job security. Biden's not going to be firing them for incompetence anytime soon because they've got access to these classified documents.
Exactly. Exactly.
But do you think we should have classified anything? How do you and I self-govern if they get to do stuff in secret and then say, oh, it's classified, top secret, you don't have access to it, and then they continue to pull these scams on us that pretty much calls us idiots?
That's a very good question.
We're continuing to do the same thing and expecting a different result when we're not doing anything different. But continuing to give them secret, you know, means to cloak themselves and do their malicious mischief. and then we get excluded from knowing anything about it till way too late.
Yeah. I mean, a FOIA only goes so far, you know. That's a really, really good point, John. A really, really good point. As a self-governed, or, you know, we the people should have access to all information. I think that, you know, in today's world, and information is, you know, so fast moving and everything, and we know what's going on in other parts of the world. I don't know that there's that many things secret, you know, that's not leaked somewhere else or common knowledge, and they call it top secret only to, you know, write stuff between the lines. I do believe what you're saying is makes a lot of sense, that we should be allowed all the information that they're allowed. You know, these people have to remember that are elected officials here in the United States, they work for we the people. They're paid with funds by the we the people.
And when we have elections and they get elected into office, that does not give them the right to commit extrinsic fraud against you and I, and to bully us and to put us under duress and exploit us and use, you know, fraudulent conveying our property, you know, our ownership rights of self-governing of us to their benefit. And then they get to use undue influence, bartering that power to do their little crony mischief backdoor, I don't know, dealings, so they can ingratiate themselves and benefit themselves, and then you and I get left in the cold without the benefit of our own property. We get treated like legislative slaves, you know. If they call that representation, then all the pimps represent prostitutes. They're not, you know, doing any harm. I'm like, no, you ain't representing me like a prostitute. I have pretty that I get to exercise my real rights. But we've been conned psychologically. It's a psyops, but it's been going on since at least 1804, from what I can tell. We never really got off start 1789, whenever our Constitution was ratified after 11 years of negotiations from the Declaration of Independence. We get the Constitution ratified, and then, shoot, by 1804, the big crony plantation owners and business owners that want to be the governing authorities over the whole world have already started putting their seeds in, and little by little we've got some advancements, because, you know, we do have slavery's not kind of as bad of a deal as it was, but it's still legislative slaves. You may not be physical slaves, but you're still, because of the legislative slave psychosis, you're still at least an economic slave, if not, you know, a psychological slave, just not physical. And, you know, women can vote now, and the different people have been liberated to a certain point, but they've still got the shackles on us. And a lot of people don't talk about this issue. They argue back and forth about, you know, who's convention, what's in the documents, was Trump worse than Biden? And that's just Satan dividing and conquering us, and they're evil people. It's a part of that group. Anyway, back to you.
Yeah, it's a vicious cycle, you know. And the foundation of this country was, you know, based on natural law, and what you're talking about, you know, and it kind of boils down to, you know, the definition of natural law. And I think it's really important that people read up on that and, you know, familiarize yourself with your basic rights. People are worried about, and Lorianne and I talked about this before, that, you know, we're concerned as Americans about our Second Amendment rights. We're very concerned about them. But without our First Amendment rights, we cannot raise grievance to the taking of our Second Amendment rights. And this Justice Department here in the United States, Homeland Security, and the FBI, well, part of the FBI is Justice Department, has been manipulating the narrative of the media. And we've known that. We've accused him of it. So I just think that the revelation of that, these documents with Biden, these other countries, you know, losing their key players, just, you know, people just stepping aside, you know, falling down like dominoes. And then Biden's uncertainty. I think we're going to see some upheaval in our own political system. And I don't know how it'll play out, how Biden will exit the stage. But I'm pretty sure it'll happen before the end of the year.
You know, I just hate seeing that we continue to allow them to amass this power, and we seem to be blind to the fact that we're allowing them this power. It's the same thing with the manipulation of this immigration. If you think about it, all of our fellow Americans that are living under the bridge or out in some homeless shelter or whatever, these people just lost their jobs at all these technology companies. They're competing with people all around the world now. There's foreigners coming in on these H-1B visas and whatnot, and they're getting the technology companies are getting these foreigners to come in for half the price or, you know, two-thirds of what they were paying the other guys. And some of them, like Disney, and I don't remember all the groups, Sony, I think, and Disney, they were making their American-based IT workers and design workers, you know, for their videos and production stuff, train their foreign replacements, or they weren't going to get their severance packages. And, you know, they're going to pay these foreigners coming in half or two-thirds of what the Americans were getting. And now we've got all of us supposed taxpayers, if you believe in that scam, now they're trying to say, oh, we have to continue to put money into all these safety net programs to take care of all these people that don't have a job and they need to be fed and whatnot. Well, then as a taxpayer, I have a right to tell the representatives to keep the foreigners out of here completely till all my fellow Americans are off the public dole, because I'm sick and tired of having to pay the public dole to help take care of them because you keep replacing them with foreigners. And then I'm sure my fellow American that's living in the streets or out of their car or under a bridge or in the homeless shelter, they're going, hey, wait, where's my right to say no to these foreigners so I can make sure that whenever I go apply for a job that the company doesn't just tell me no and, you know, lets the foreigner work on my behalf. Don't they have a responsibility to the American citizens first before they hire a foreigner? It's just more power consolidated to the oligarchy of robber barons that have gotten into these gatekeeper positions or influence positions, because sometimes they're, you know, using, I call them, nefarious means by baiting and switching with our congressmen. You know, either, hey, do what we want. When you get elected to office, do what we want you to do. We'll make you a millionaire. If you buck the system and want to try to, you know, be a Lone Ranger or, you know, like Matt Gaetz or whatnot, then, hey, you won't be a millionaire, but you might lose somebody in your family, or you might get your character destroyed or your business destroyed or all of the above. You play our game or we're going to play hardball with you. And we've just got to have the conversation to figure out how to stop this nonsense. And the more we keep giving them power to do stuff in secret, that just keeps giving them more power to rape us over the coals. And our country's going, they're already trying to bankrupt us because that's what they want to do. They want America to be bankrupt so then they can force the one world corporate governing group on us. And I think you guys already know that. You spoke about it, but just in case people that might be listening are not privy to all the conversations you've had before, they'll get a little more of it right now, too. Thanks for the time. Back to you.
Back to you, doll.
Back to me. So, folks, Lorianne, I wanted you to be able to plug your show while we were still live, but we plugged it a couple times, so I think we're okay. Got it covered.
Yeah, you did very well at the beginning of the show. So, yeah, we just went into overtime. So the opportunity to call in for anybody out there has come to pass.
Yeah. Now, I think that the chat will stay up for a bit. I don't know how long chat stays on after we go into overtime.
I think it stays on for the hour during the bonus hour.
Okay. Yeah, because I see chat's pretty active, and we've got some enlightening conversations going there. So, just keep on chatting, folks, and drop your questions in chat if you have anything. V, while we have you on the line still, I was going to ask you about Mayor Adams' mental health response, crisis response to the mental health population on the street. I had reported a couple times on the show that he had created a task force to go and round up mentally ill people and institutionalize them. Is that still an initiative that is going strong, or is it petered out with pushback?
That's a good question. One that I really have not been following up on, because the last I heard is he was saying that the media is over-exaggerating our crime issue and our mental health issue, and he was saying that it's not that bad. So I'm really curious about whether that task force – let me see here.
Yeah, because it was interesting, because it was compromised of first responders, police officers, you know, people that come in contact with these people on the streets. And, you know, every time I see something like that, of course, my mind goes to, well, where are they putting these people, and can you define crazy? And it was funny, because one of the quotes I read by Adams was, he goes, well, you know, the person with no shoes is yelling on the street corner, you know, well, and talking to themselves. Well, what if somebody is standing on a street corner and, you know, they're addressing the crowd and they're, you know, giving a political speech, or they're talking about the One World Order or something like that, you know, just trying to inform people. And somebody comes along and goes, hey, we got another one over on the corner. Let's go nab him up. And what the hell? It just seemed like there wasn't very many straight, like, a clear guidance on, you know, who qualified to be scooped up and disappeared.
Well, you know what? I'm seeing here that he started that involuntary committing for people with mental health crisis in November. So I do remember it faintly, but I also, like I said, the way that he's also going on about immigrants and how crime is not that bad in the trains, this totally got erased from my head. But he said it's a myth that first responders can only involuntarily commit those who displayed an overt act, that they may be suicidal, violent, or a danger to others, but that the law allowed first responders to involuntarily commit those who can't meet their own basic human needs, which is a much lower bar.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, sadly, that would pretty much include and encompass a large swath of the homeless population that is suffering from addiction, especially, you know, the levels of addiction that we're seeing here in the United States and what it's doing to people. I mean, we've got literal, zombie cities with, at Pennsylvania and Kensington and Seattle, Washington, Portland, Oregon. I mean, I've been in those cities, and these people walk around just half dead. Sores all over them and everything else. I mean, is that not, you know, a mental health? Isn't that a health crisis too? I mean, it's so hard.
Absolutely.
I couldn't imagine being in the position where I'd have to evaluate. I mean, that person is obviously in a state of crisis and a harm to themselves. And if they're handling fentanyl or selling fentanyl, they're a harm to everybody they come in contact with.
That's true. I'm thankful that fentanyl seems to have a sedative effect, like some sedative, what's the word? It sedates people.
Yeah.
That's what that word.
Yeah, sedative.
But the one that really had me concerned for a while were the bath salts, because they had people like literally eating other people's flesh. It's really weird.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's the new Trank that's hitting the streets, and then the European scrouge that was blowing through, and kind of the crocodile that was actually eating people's bodies alive. So, yeah, all those things are very sedating, and the people just walk around like zombies and, you know, steal from the stores, and it's just a vicious cycle, and it's really sad. But, you know, I've looked at his initiative, and I know Adam said, you know, one thing, you know, like, oh, everybody's exaggerating and stuff. But at the same time, it's like him saying crime's not that bad.
Right. That's exactly what he's saying. Just the way he puts it, and this is interesting because, of course, we can't do this with COVID, but he'll say, well, we have 2.5 million people that ride the subway every day, and only a couple hundred get hurt or assaulted. So he's like, you know, that's a drop in the bucket. But the fear of being hurt is so pervasive that it makes people so guarded, irritable, and I think that's why many of New Yorkers that are considered strap hangers, you know, that take public transportation, are so hostile to one another. Everybody's always on the defensive. But, I mean, now the city looks like where all the tourists used to go, what we had just spent a decade or so cleaning up, is back to the way it used to be, with people sleeping on the street, getting high in public, you know, committing lewd acts because they're not in the right state of mind. And, you know, again, with these progressive policies, that everybody has the right to get high and the right to be an addict and the right to be homeless, and that imposes on the right of other people who want, you know, a happy, peaceful, I guess, living situation. You want to have a place where you can walk around and feel safe, but you're imposing on someone's freedom to live on a cardboard box and shoot up heroin. Isn't that ironic? So, I mean, I don't understand why one takes precedence over the other, especially when the people who want that good quality of life are taxpaying people who have the mindset to go and vote or to sit in on a meeting of city council or school board and stuff like that. Like, they just really crap all over people like that.
Seattle's facing the
literally
same thing. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
But, you know, and businesses. I was seeing a report, an interview of a Seattle business owner that they keep calling law enforcement to try to, and city, you know, city officials to try to do something because, you know, he has homeless people pissing and shitting and doing drugs right in front of his area of business, and he's having to spend money out of his own pocket to clean it up multiple times a day, you know, because the city isn't cleaning it up. Nobody's doing anything about it. And so it's like, why is it that they're allowed to encroach on a person's place of business like this and make that person pay for it? And, you know, it doesn't make any sense at all. That business owner is already paying taxes, already paying a lease fee for the space, already paying for all kinds of regulations to operate his business. Why should he have to incur the additional expense of multiple times a day having to clean up the piss and the shit and the drug paraphernalia right outside his front door?
Right.
Not to mention the loss of business because people don't want to walk through that to walk through the door and you know, shop in his store.
and looting, going into a store and walking out with an arm full of groceries.
Yeah, it was under $900. It's okay. You
bread
know,
for their family, like AOC said, bread for
exactly.
their family.
Yeah, and then, you know, you look at these progressive cities, you know, not only did they defund their police, they have some of the most dangerous prosecutors and district attorneys ever. They don't want to prosecute anybody.
Right.
And the police can only do so much. They can only just say, all they can do is be present anymore in these situations. So not only are they understaffed, underfunded, completely underappreciated, they don't even have the backing of the DA. They can bring people to the court. They can take people to jail all day and all night. And those clowns, you know, Bob Ferguson in King County in Seattle, his catch and release, catch and release, catch and release.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's
ridiculous. I'm sure you've heard. NYPD has had already, I think, two sets of officers caught having sex, you know. It's one in the academy and then another in their car out just outside the precinct in the back where they park their personal vehicles. These people not taking the job seriously. They're very unprofessional. We just had another suicide. We had one who jumped off a building last week, and this one shot himself. I think it was last night or the day before. So it's a shame.
Yeah, and that just breaks your heart. That's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, no, there's another issue to talk about. The mental health crisis going on with our law enforcement.
That's right.
But they're allowed to have
guns.
Are there red flag laws when that apply to law? Or do they get qualified immunity then, too?
Right. You know, I love how the police lost the qualified immunity, but not the assistant district attorneys, not the judges, not anybody else in law enforcement. But meanwhile, they're all tied together, the entire criminal justice system. We're all dependent on one another. Not one piece of the cog can be missing. But the police lose the qualified. It's just, it makes no sense.
Yeah, and that's interesting that you bring that up, because Siobhan, the police officer that was jailed for George Floyd's death, is repealing his conviction, as he should. He died from a fentanyl overdose. We all know that.
Interesting.
You know, things, I think, escalated, and they are what they are. It was an unfortunate situation, but, you know, that's what happens when you resist arrest, too. You're restrained. You know, there were so many factors in that. But, you know, we have to quit. I mean, there's a fine line. And we need to get back to the balance where these people are allowed to do their job.
It's true. It's not an easy job. And sometimes I'm like, you know what? I think there should be, and this should come from the unions, there should be an ability for an officer to say, you know what? This boss or this mandate is causing me to infringe on people's constitutional rights, and I refuse to enforce it. There should be some clause that protects officers, because that would be me. I would not have been forcing people to sit 6 feet apart. I would not have been forcing people to put masks on, and I would have been in a lot of damn trouble. So,
yeah, and you know, that's where you know, your sheriff's department. If you have a sheriff's department where your sheriff is locally elected, now that has been a godsend for some communities that were imposed upon with, you know, tyrannical mandates, where some of the sheriffs just said, no, we're not going to go arrest that barber for opening his shop. You know, we saw that in, you know, Washington State. We saw it in Oregon. We saw it in California. People, you know, sheriff's departments and stuff stand back. But as long as you don't have prosecutors, as long as we have prosecutors that refuse to uphold the law and the Constitution and the the, you know, the laws of the land and their state, then, yeah, our law enforcement's just out there babysitting. And that's, you know, can't keep the public safe if the criminals are just re-released into these communities. So it's really interesting. And the expectation that law enforcement will pick up where the border control, where the border patrol, you know, was unable to stop gaps. That's another problem that we're facing right now. You know, they're dealing with an influx of migrants that are here, you know, illegally and have already broken the law to get here, and they have nothing to lose. And they don't want to follow the laws, but they want all the constitutional rights. So, you know, I can't sympathize enough. Cannot.
Thanks.
So, Lorianne?
Yes.
You're refreshing your drink, are you? I hear the tinkle of ice somewhere.
She does that.
Somebody,
no, no, I'm still sitting here. I was just muted while you were talking.
No.
Everywhere she goes.
But you couldn't hear me burp because I'm drinking a beer.
Drinking
I'm
a
out
beer.
Of hard alcohol and resorting to beer.
Nice.
Oh, no.
I heard beer keeps kidney stones away, so good for you. Kidney stone free.
I'm drinking a Comatose Imperial IPA.
Ooh,
whoa.
Comatose is 8.5% alcohol by volume. Good stuff.
Wow. Yes, it is. All right. So real quick while we're talking about blue states. So California has had all of this rain, more rain than they've had in almost a decade. And they have set aside, you know, billions of dollars to build their aquifers and water holding reservoir facilities and stuff, infrastructure. And that money is gone over the years. All the taxpayers, you know, all these promises and stuff. And they've seen 95% of this rain just go back into the ocean. And devastating, you know, crops and communities and widespread flooding. Yeah, it's insane what they're doing. They're saying that enough rain fell in the state, some 32 trillion gallons. That's enough for the agricultural, industrial, and residential needs for the next 10 years if the water had been stored.
Or it could have been, yeah. And you know what? I'm sorry. I have to take the blame for this because, you know, back last summer when I was talking about, you know, Lake Mead and the Columbia River, or I mean the Colorado River Basin and all the drought, and I was saying, you know, California and these states really need some kind of miracle of a whole bunch of rain in order to solve this problem. And, well, now California is getting all of it. And yet, you know, they weren't prepared for it because they've been in a state of drought for so long that, you know, and you know they got federal money to do this, and yet, you know,
right.
And to build this stuff, pocketed it, never did it, and now, of course, just like the Department of Defense, they can't account for $2 trillion worth of money. Well, now California is the same way with all the federal funding and state funding that were supposed to go into, you know, these water aquifers. Like, you know, we got to catch every damn drop that falls from the sky if we can, and just sitting on it. And now here they are in a state of devastation because of, you know, being, just plummeted with rain nonstop like this. And, you know, they really, really, really needed it, but not to this extent. But number two, just all the runoff going into the sea, if that would have been captured, then, you know, and if it was managed properly, we would not be seeing all of this farmland topsoil just washing away. And it's going to, you know, further impact agriculture that was already impacted bad enough. And so, and part of this runoff, we can't forget, is that, you know, farmers, because of the drought, the farmers were the first ones to be restricted on their water use and how much water they're allocated. And so these farmers had to, you know, stop farming like two-thirds of their land because they didn't have enough water. And so what happens when they can't farm it? You know, then it's just topsoil that's just ready and waiting for a big, huge downfall of rain to come and wash it all out. If they had been able to plant it, you know, if it had been managed properly and then they'd have been able to plant it, this wouldn't be happening.
Damn. Mm.
Exactly. And we're looking at, you know, record high gas price or record high fuel or food prices. Ah. And, you know, food shortages and everything else. I mean, it almost seems planned, calculated. I hate
Absolutely.
It that my mind works like that anymore.
Oh, it's been planned for a long
you
time.
Know?
You know, and I think even when discussing with Lake Mead, they made these water allocations along the Colorado River, both Lake Mead Reservoir and Lake Powell. And they made these water allocations at a time when they were not in drought, where there was record rainfall, where the reserves were full to capacity. And that's when they made those water allocations based on the amount of rainfall in a plentiful time with absolutely zero plan for when they go through periodic phases of drought, which always happens. You know, it's this drought that they've experienced or we've experienced here in the West for the last few years is not the first time. It's a, you know, it's a cyclical thing, but they made no plans for that whatsoever. So, you know, this has been something that has been planned for a very, very long time to have happen. And now here we are. You know, it's, you know, these food shortages, you know, it's all coming. And you're right. It absolutely was planned. It was planned for decades to happen this way. And now it's finally happening. And so, you know, and then at the same time, you know, now that all these farmers are hurting, it's an excuse to buy up that farmland because these farmers that are only able to farm a third of their land because they can't get enough water allocated to them are going to be forced to sell at a very, very cheap rate. And then people like Bill Gates can buy it up, and then they can fortify it with their Monsanto shit, and they can fortify it with their mRNA vaccine vegetables that they're going to grow. And you know that they're going to fight any kind of labeling laws to disclose that, hey, yeah, this, you know, potato that you're buying or this, you know, head of lettuce that you're buying is infused with mRNA vaccines, any kind of labeling laws, they'll have the money to fight it. And so you won't even know. You'll be thinking you're buying this, you know, and probably even bypass organic because, you know, the organic laws probably won't even keep up. They'll fight any organic laws to force labeling. So we might even be able to, you know, won't be able to even buy organic and not be inoculated. This is the future that they've been planning for a long time. It is no accident that Bill Gates has been buying up as much farmland as he has been during this time, and because he keeps getting it cheaper and cheaper and cheaper because of all this water crisis and supply chain issues and stuff like that. He's taking advantage of it left and right, and China is too. You know, and more states are having to create laws to block China from being allowed to purchase farmland here in the States, you know, so they got their eyes on it as well. So, you know, this
what states
this
are blocking
is all coming to fruition.
Florida.
I think South Dakota has laws to block it too. Christine Owens smart enough to head that up. Of course, and I think that even Christine Owens blocked Bill Gates from buying farmland in South Dakota, and so that's why Bill Gates just purchased something like, I think, like 4,000 acres or something like that in North Dakota instead.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's trying to gobble it up where he can.
You know, we still have a baby formula shortage.
Really?
It's just not in the news. We still have it.
Oh, my goodness.
I missed what you said, V.
I couldn't even imagine.
We
still have a baby.
Shortage.
A baby formula shortage. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and this.
Yeah, and what was the first company? Wasn't it like DuPont? Wasn't it DuPont that was the first company to make baby formula? That
good
was
question.
Infused with
poison. I'm not.
I'm pretty sure. I think it was DuPont that made. It was one of the first companies, or like a subsidiary or something. But I remember seeing something about the first baby formula being produced was made by a chemical manufacturer, which I'm pretty sure was DuPont. Check me if I'm wrong on that. And so, you know, go figure. So you're going to, just like Monsanto, you know, the makers of Agent Orange, you know, now being the leader in food production, you know, so they've gone from a company making poisons for war to a company that, you know, has high stakes and manipulates most of our food supply. And baby formula is no exception. Baby formula has had its start the very same way.
Well, I was going to say about baby formula, we all saw the video footage of the trucker who was being told to haul humongous pallets of baby formula to these landfills where they were being crushed and buried. And it was like, what's going on? These are all good cans of formula, and they were either sending them to the border for the immigrants or they were destroying them in a landfill. And she took video footage of it. Of course, she got in big trouble, and nobody knows where she is now, of course. We're all trying to keep up with her on TikTok. She's fell off the map.
Yeah,
oh, man. You know what? And I don't remember seeing that. If you have any articles on that, fire it off.
Oh, I have the video. Oh, yeah. I will send it to you. Yes.
Yuck.
Thank you.
All right. So I am reading up. So there was a new test find toxic forever chemicals in pet food bags and baby textiles. So that's not good. PFAS, no, contamination. Ew. Yeah, I'm going to send you this link, ladies, both of you, in case you have a pet or a baby you're feeding. But, yeah. It's this agenda, you know, and we're looking at the eggs, you know, everybody's talking about egg and food prices and chicken prices and stuff. And we've been seeing for the last couple of years, you know, the report of one chicken in a, you know, processing facility or egg laying, you know, facility caught, you know, the bird flu and they cull 5 million birds, you know, and it's like, that doesn't sound right. You know, nobody does business like that. So.
I know, like if our government can afford to pay for everybody to get tested for COVID multiple times, why can't then our government pay to actually test animals? Okay, so one of your chickens has bird flu. That doesn't mean all 5 million of them have it. Why
right.
can't we test them and only
right.
kill the ones that test positive? You know?
But
we can
who's
afford
testing them anyway?
To test millions of people multiple times with COVID, we can afford that.
Yeah. Or to give billions of dollars to, you know, Ukraine. And that's
exactly.
another thing. I think a lot of that grift is going to the nest egg for all these people that are going to be out of politics and disappeared. You know, they'll just disappear them, and they'll have a nest egg and Hunter waiting for them, and you know, they'll decommission the meat puppet and send them to Ukraine and give them a new face or something. I don't know. It's such a weird world.
Ooh.
I just, you know, nothing.
I know.
Before I speaking of Ukraine and our weapons, I read an article stating that we are depleting our weapons, our own U.S. weapons stockpile.
Yes.
Giving it to Ukraine. And it's going to take us 7 years to restockpile just what we're giving to Ukraine. And then and then you top that off with all the equipment that we left behind after, you know, for the Taliban after the Afghanistan withdrawal. You know, so this is another systematic thing. The writing's on the wall is to disarm America, not just citizens with their guns, but disarm our own military. And deplete our own weapons reserves so that, I don't know, maybe China or Russia, you know, somebody can take advantage of that if they want to. And we'll be left defenseless. So here we go again, you know, giving all of our stuff away to Ukraine. Here you go. Here's all these weapon systems, all these ammo, all these guns, all these anti-missile weapon systems. And depleting our own here at home to leave us open, wide open for a country to invade if they want to.
And that's only after depleting our armed forces personnel by, you know, the draconian vaccine mandate. How many people did not reenlist and or were dismissed from military service because of that? And or fear of
well,
that.
Yeah, and
the
they
future.
Finally lifted that mandate, and they don't want to actually give back pay to any of our armed forces that were let go because they refused or could not take it. Didn't matter, even if it's a medical reason. It didn't matter. If you're one of those military people that got let go for this reason, how likely is it that you're going to want to reenlist? Yes, please give me my job back. You know, after you destroyed my life already, you know, that who would want that? Nobody would.
Yeah, exactly.
And who'd want to sign
yeah,
up for
then,
it new?
Yeah, and then they've got their pronouns they got to worry about and all the woke bullshit and everything else. No. That breaks my heart for our service members that they've been, you know, subjected to that to begin with. Any of it at all. You know, But it is they're just pecking away. And I say they, and when I say they, it's not just politicians here in the United States. This is a worldwide thing. Look at, you know, for example.
You know, V should be thankful that she got injured. You know, honestly,
yeah.
V, you should be thankful that you got injured and you had to have your hip surgeries and shit, because that's the very thing that allowed you to bypass the mandates over there in New York.
You're absolutely right. I'm very thankful.
I know, and it makes us sad that you've gone through all this pain and you know, rehab and to, you
yes.
know, get your hip better and stuff, but still, Yeah, and you'll probably, you know, I mean, it just, that's horrible. But like Lori Ann
said. But at least
said,
you won't have a stroke or heart attack.
Or die of a coincidence. Oh, I'm having a sudden coincidence.
Right.
Found collapsed on the floor, in the middle of her living room floor. Another sad statistic.
Listing groceries. Coincidence. Happened. Right, I sent both of you one video of a woman who is
I
the trucker. Right, who's showing tons and tons of baby food just thrown away. And she was like, I don't think any of this stuff was expired. And there was a one point where she checked one of the pallets and none of it was. But she was either delivering to the border or she was throwing it out. But none of it was going to the supermarkets. And I'm sure y'all know that this country sends expired medications abroad to other countries, third world countries, poor countries. Like we'll send expired EpiPens or medications that are, you know, past their so-called shelf life, and they're still good.
Oh yeah, but if you're homeless and you're digging in a garbage can for those very same things, then you know you might get shot for it.
Exactly.
No, you'll be able to sue. I got sick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, all that stuff has a way beyond shelf life, and they're stable for a very long time, like EpiPens, you know, for years afterwards. I don't recommend them, you know, for people, but I, for one, living literally in the middle of nowhere, I hoard stuff like that. Like, you know, if we don't use something, I keep it. I've got stuff. You have to blow the dust off it to figure out what it is. But, you know, when push comes to shove, it's better than nothing, you know.
Right.
But, yeah.
Well, yeah, like it's always boggled my mind why they put an expiration date on salt. You know, hey, this salt is mined from, you know, way underground over millions of years. But, you know, you better use it within the next 2 years or it expires. Better throw it away if it does.
Yeah, and this is the stuff that where they say the government goes, we have these guidelines to keep you safe. We shut down your job to keep you safe. We made you walk this way up a shopping aisle to keep you safe. You know, I mean, made your child sit outside and eat their lunch on a bucket to keep them outside in the cold to keep them safe. You know, and this, I always like to say.
I know. You still remember that story from here in Portland. I know where that one comes from.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Making the little fucking kids eat when it's 40 degrees and downpour rain outside to keep them safe.
Yeah. So, I mean, but the fear is nothing but the unknown. That's all fear is. We're afraid of things we don't know. Or we get nervous about a new thing we're going to try for the first time. That's like a nervous and fear kind of in the same, you know, same realm. And just that, and I want people to remember that when you're afraid of something, it's just because you haven't done it yet. You haven't experienced it yet. You know, death never gets easier. But, you know, with the experience, you gain new tools through living through loss or something that was fearful. You're like, your primal self goes, oh, yeah, I have the tools to get through this. It's not going to make me happier. I'm still going to be sad, but I'm going to get through this. And I want people to remember that. Like the next time the government springs something on you and you're like, holy shit, what are we going to do? Just remember that you've probably in some, you know, level in the last few years had to overcome this obstacle once or twice before. You know, so don't let uncertainty hold you back or make you feel compelled to comply. That's, I think, what I'm trying to say is do not let fear, do not let compliance be your reaction to fear.
That's
you know, that, like they always say, if you're a woman and you're attacked, scream, fight back, scratch, kick, do everything, you know. And then now we have a whole generation of like kids that were eating outside in buckets in the cold who are like they're conditioned to comply. Once they get afraid of something or they, you know, compliance is their, so they're being conditioned. But thank God there's a generation, our generation and or older or a little bit younger, who can think a little more, what's the word I want to look for, critical thinking. Use a little more reasoning and experience and use pull these tools out because I know a lot of people have, you know, taking the heed of the warning of, you know, stock up on things, you know, toilet paper and medications and this and that. And then somewhere in this lull of things opening back up and everything, people kind of let their guard down. But did continue to put up for these days, these coming days, because I do, we're not over the worst of it. I don't think. I hate to be I don't want to be negative or a naysayer.
This year,
but
I predicted it early on last year that 2023 is going to be rough. We thought we saw it rough. No, 2023 is going to be rough. And it's already starting to look a hell of a lot like I was right. And again, I hate being right on this. As much as me being an Aries loves to be right about shit, I don't like being right about this. You know, I really don't, you know, and it's to the point where, like, I don't even want to throw away my old rags, you know, old fucking holy rags and stuff. Why? Because I might have to use that instead of toilet paper, you know. I might have to use that instead of maxi pads, you know, like, and just, like, wash them and, like, go back to old school days where, you know, we had to use cloth diapers and cloth, you know, cloth in between our crotches for our periods, you know, and stuff like that, like back in the old days, you know, like, well, you know, it's a reality, right? You know, like, I don't even want to throw away my old rags for that reason, and, because you never know what uses they might have in a shortage of you know, toilet paper or maxi pads.
I'm a hoarder of all screws and nails and everything, so I'm not one to speak. But,
well, you know,
you know,
women
I
used
just,
to use moss. Like, I want to go up on my roof and collect the moss
that.
That's growing.
I don't want to talk about that, man. No, we're not. We're not going there. I'm serious.
Ew.
I'm serious.
Well, no, but not just for that, but for wounds. You know, you cut yourself or whatever, you know, if you don't have bandages, you can get bandages, medical supplies, moss, you know.
I have
Native
jars
Americans
of that.
Used to use
Marianne.
Moss to, you know, cover their when they got cut or scraped or whatever, you know. Like, moss
actually,
has many uses.
Marianne, my sister and I, we both harvest that. We forage it. We call it old man's beard. The type of moss that we collect here in rural Alaska. And we collect it after the first freeze. And when we go up, we go and we get low bush cranberries, lingonberries, and we harvest the Labrador tea and the old man's beard at that time. We use it for infections, like open wounds, toothaches. We make a cough syrup from it. Yeah. So, no, I definitely moss.
So I wasn't joking. Yeah.
Oh, I know. But, yeah, but so, I mean, I just said people shouldn't let their guard down. And I think one of my my best suggestions is, you know, when you're putting together that that rainy day or that survival, you know, food pantry. Focus on, you know, the staples that people always do. But, yeah, you can have all the beans and rice and crap like that in the world in your pantry, but you got to have spices, too. Otherwise, all that stuff just tastes like beans and rice after a while. So make sure you stock up on plenty of spices and the good stuff. For the love of Pete, you know, there was a sriracha cock sauce shortage, you know, here in the United States all summer long. That's a staple in my house. I was walking to the grocery store one day. I was like, oh, gosh. And I took everything I had not to buy out the whole shelf just in case.
But I still have a bottle of sriracha that I bought last spring because it was anticipated there would be a shortage. So I was like, you know, and I bought it on sale, and I still have it in my pantry.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just little things like that. And another thing I like to remind people, like when things go on sale or you have just a little bit of extra money, you know, left over, just take $10 and add it to, you know, your pantry stuff that you're going to use for your survival pantry. And go through your survival pantry periodically and check for those pesky expiration dates that don't mean a whole lot, but it is a good time to probably just eat that food right now in the here and now and replace it with next time you go shopping. But, you know, even that type of stuff, just
but
like
you
the medication,
can ignore the expiration date on salt pretty safely.
And a lot of stuff. A lot of, you know, like say a jar of spaghetti sauce, it's usually good for years past their shelf date. Stuff. Honest, I swear. It's a scam. It's a, And the parameters on canning, the guidelines, the U.S. guidelines on canning foods these days for people at home, I can see why people don't can food. They've been so misinformed by the government on what you can do and how you can do it. People have been canning a lot of this stuff for, you know, very, very long time, and I've been doing my canning, and the government would kind of shut my pantry down, you know, because of canning pressure times and how long I tell my family they can eat, you know, a jar of salmon after I've done it. Government wants me to say 1 year, and I'm like, bull crap. If it doesn't smell funny and it's sealed, go ahead and eat it.
I've seen expiration dates on mouthwash.
Yeah. What? It's all alcohol.
You're so silly.
I'm checking that Tito's bottle. See if there is any expiration date on that Tito's. Oh, damn, I don't have Tito's. That's probably why I still have the focus to do an overtime show. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So, V, you're doing your – I see you're on Facebook and you have your food page.
Yes. I was a consultant with Pampered Chef. I like to cook and record it, but I haven't been keeping up. I was teaching my daughter how to cook. And I wasn't recording it. And one of my tripods with the light broke thanks to my six-year-old. He was like, what's this? And he just snapped it. It snapped like a piece of like fragile candy. So I've been meaning to. Otherwise, like, yeah, I'm a consultant. I joined because I get a discount. And almost everything in my kitchen is from that company. My air fryer, my pressure cooker. My grill, griddle. I have all the everything. So, but it's pretty good stuff, you know. I like it. I'm not a big fan of their plastic cutting boards. Now I get my cutting boards from Norwex, which I'm also a consultant with. They make their own rice husks. If you've ever heard of that, like it's not. Yeah, no more plastics. No more melamine. It doesn't dull the knives, and it's compostable. Biodegradable,
I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting. Yeah, cutting boards, they're an interesting but dangerous. Well, they're interesting in like how much crap gets stuck in your cutting board and or how many plastics are breaking off into your salad
right.
these days. So, yeah. Anything new?
I'm sure you know, my cutting board is a bamboo.
Oh, yeah, bamboo. I like
my
that.
My cutting board is a bamboo, and I make sure that, you know, after I use it, I pull the thing out, hot water, plenty of soap, you know, that kind of stuff, to make sure it's thoroughly cleaned. And, you know, so you've got to be wary of that. But the plastic ones I've stayed away from for a long time, mainly because they are like, you know, they're made to be more like porous. So, you know, when you, with those fine slices from your knife and stuff, then the bacteria and stuff will grow and they're porous. So they're purposely made to be, you know, to eventually get you sick, I think. That's what I think.
Yeah, I found plastics to be a little bit pervasive. They seem to be in everything. So we're swallowing the equivalent of a credit card worth of plastic every week. And that includes tea bags, all the things that I've been trying to kind of move to get away from plastics. I'm still getting them anyway. It kind of sucks. But yeah, I don't like the bamboo too much. I was thinking about it. I do use it, but they split very fast on me. I wash them a lot. I cook 3 or 4 times a day. So with me, something has to really last. It has to be very durable.
Yeah.
It might depend on what you get, because mine's lasted quite a bit. I paid a good amount of money for it, too, because it was, you know, it had to be, you know, custom sized for, you know, for the cupboard that I have and, you know, for the length and the width. And it is really solid. I mean, as many times as I've used it, like this thing just, it hasn't split at all. You can hardly see any cuts from the knives after all the times that I've used it. So, you know, it's kind of, it depends on, you know, I'll have to look at where I even bought it from, but I bought it specifically because it was, you know, supposed to be really, really durable and really, really well made. And I got to tell you, it was money well spent. I think I spent probably like almost $100 on it.
Oh, nice.
Just for a cutting board.
Which soaps? I use an enzyme-based dish soap now, so my hands don't get dried out anymore, which is great because I don't have a dishwasher either. So,
I hardly use it
in your new house.
What's
can
that?
Can I use it? Are you going to have a dishwasher in your house? Can I use it?
yeah.
I'm coming over.
Yeah, I'll send my
I wish I could give you mine because I hardly ever use mine.
Well, I will take yours. Don't play with me.
I'd rather have more cupboard space.
That's so funny, V. I just gave my sister my dishwasher that we had salvaged from my house before we tore it down. And I asked my husband, why did you say that? And he goes, well, it was a brand new dishwasher and tore down a practically brand new house. So, but yeah, I just gave it to her because I had been sitting in my boat shed and eventually I'll have to get a new one for the new house. But I have been hand washing. I know this sounds like poor girl, but I've been living in a 400 square foot cabin since May with no dishwasher. And it's getting rough.
Right.
So.
I believe it's Peel Torrent.
You sounded really far away there, V.
No. I know, I took a call. I'm sorry.
Okay. Good deal. But, yeah, I mean, I never even use – I just hand wash mine. You know, I just pots and pans and stuff. I mean, I guess I'd probably use my dishwasher more if it was more than just me. You know, if you have 3 or 4 people in your house or whatever, then okay.
Yeah,
you know, but – I still just prefer it because, I have never owned a fucking dishwasher that actually gets my dishes clean, that I haven't actually had to, like, re-rinse or re-wash again because the film is on it, especially glasses and stuff. And so I just gave up on it. I'm like, you know what? Screw using it. I wash them better by hand myself, you know. So.
Yeah. Forgive me. I had a call.
No problem.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. All right. Well, ladies, I think we're just about out of time. We're going to get kicked off here. So, V, I want to thank you so very much for joining the show tonight. I missed your voice. I miss my Freedomizer pals and stuff and my girlfriends, my homies. So I really appreciate you calling in tonight. You're always welcome. And, you know, I'm always glad to have you here, and we'd like make a room for you if you'd like to, you know, join in on the party here, or a Lucid Libertarian, you know, there's always room for you.
That's great. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. If you can call in Sunday nights, you know, feel free to do so. But I know work usually determines your availability on that, but you are definitely
always
welcome.
Right, yeah, we get
welcome.
The occasional phone call. I mean, you know how it is. That's why I took it at the last second. I didn't have the chance to tell you, hold on. So forgive me.
No, that's fine. That's fine. And you're working, I get it.
We understand.
Yeah. Yep. And then, Lori-Ann, do you have any guests besides myself on Sunday night booked yet? Or?
Nope. No guests booked for Sunday night. So it's going to be the usual free crawl show. Plenty to talk about.
Yep.
You know, a lot of the stuff that we didn't do tonight, we can definitely hit up on Sunday, plus whatever transpires between now and then. It's a free-for-all show. So it'll all be good.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a lot of content we didn't get to tonight. We've got a lot of really great clips lined up and stuff. I'm going to keep my eye on that, you know, these prime ministers and presidents that are stepping down in other places. I think it's going to connect the dots. We might be able to connect some more dots here soon. And V, like I said, thank you so much for calling in, and really loved it that you took the time and, you know, joined us tonight on this Friday night. You're all the way over on
the
East Coast,
miss
so
you,
I know
V.
It's late for you.
Yeah. Thanks. No, I had, I guess, a little bit more elbow room, but we'll see about Sunday. I'll definitely give it a try.
Yeah, I just love to.
It was nice catching up,
keep
though.
And keep putting out that great content on Facebook. I love your videos and, you know, recipes and everything that you put up. So, yeah,
thank
I
you.
Love it. It's very well done. And then the rest of us, we will be back next Friday night, 8 p.m. Pacific, usual time and place. Lori-Ann will be here with me. We'll be hopefully connecting some more dots on the world stage, what's going on, and, of course, you know, the usual muckery that happens between now and then. So until then, we're going to sign off for this broadcast. And this is Dahl and Lori-Ann and the Alaska Patriot Network. Stay safe. Stay free. Keep your powder dry.
Good night, my dear. Good night, V.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, ladies.